Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm Trey, your Dark Magician Girl.
And I'm Xavier, your Acceleracer Digi-Destined, chosen by the Heart of the Cards duelist.
Now, before we get started today, I want to remind everyone in the audience that this show is not intended for kids, even if our favorite shows are totally intended for kids.
So we are... after a slight hiatus, because for those of you that have not realized yet, we're still college students, so we have to do midterms, but it's fine, because just like Yu-Gi-Oh, we had to take a break before entering the next arc, Waking the Dragons.
This is part two, obviously, of our kind of weird Yu-Gi-Oh synopsis and thoughts series. In this episode, we'll be completing the run of original Yu-Gi-Oh! And not talking about the movies, because I don't care that Seto Kaiba sent his consciousness to the afterlife.
Even though, that's gotta be the saltiest run back in anime history, just about. It was really bad.
Yeah, so we're gonna cover a couple of arcs. It starts with, as Xavier said, the Waking the Dragons arc, or as a lot of people may know it, like, the Seal of Orichalcos arc. And, I think this arc is it's quote unquote filler. I think this arc's really great. I like this arc a lot.
So this brings up an interesting conversation. Complete side tangent, right? So when I was a kid watching Yu-Gi-Oh, I don't think as it was airing, it's very confusing, the Yu-Gi-Oh timeline, because I think original Yu-Gi-Oh technically aired in 1998 and just sort of kept going, like season one of Power Rangers.
Yeah. We got it in America in 2000, I think.
But like, I remember the Orichalcos arc and watching it live and thinking as a kid that it was like the coolest shit ever. And maybe I just didn't have a good conception of what a filler arc was, but even now, looking back on it on the subsequent rewatches that I've done, the Orichalcos arc isn't really written like a filler arc. It's written like a straight-up continuation. And also, I go back and forth of, can anything in Yu-Gi-Oh! Really be a filler because there is no manga to go off of?
Yeah. I think the way people talk about it, right, is that Duelist Kingdom, Battle City... Fuck Virtual. They get that out of there. They get Waking the Dragons out of there. Dungeon Dice Monsters is canon, those few episodes. And then they get the tournament out of there. And then they get Capsule Monsters out of there. And it's just Dawn of the Duel. So there's only like four main arcs they call canon. But the Yu-Gi-Oh! Conversation is really weird. Because like for me, the quote-unquote filler is just the stuff I can skip because I don't like it. Which is to say the Kaiba Grand Prix tournament thing and Capsule Monsters.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess this is a good place to sort of jump in to Waking the Dragon, in which we find out that the city of Atlantis was some weird, like, was eaten by the spirits of the Orichalcos, which is a giant, how many sides does that star have? Six? Is it a star of David in a circle?
It might be a Star of David in the circle. I don't remember. I just know they want the funny Leviathan like so bad.
Yeah. So Atlantis had four, or is it three? Three dragons, three guardian dragons, and also the Orichalcos faction.
Yeah. It's like the Order of Orichalcos, which are these weird Atlantean people. Because this is the arc where you learn all of the duel monsters, or at least some of them, used to be spirits that existed on Earth at Atlantis before Atlantis fell into the ocean.
Yeah, and so basically the Order of the Orichalcos shows up and is like, hey, we're going to need all of the best duelists and also a bunch of duelist souls to bring back Atlantis.
And this starts with pretty kind of early in the series. Yugi like gets his ass beat. And gets his soul stolen and put in like a seal card. So you spend a lot more time with Yami at the forefront this arc than Yugi at the forefront with the gang.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that makes the Waking the Dragon arc both interesting, unique, and like really good writing wise is not only do you like you have to see what the Pharaoh is like without Yugi, but like he carries a lot of guilt for what happened, and you see him sort of falter both mentally and emotionally, which I imagine would happen if you're like used to having a separate being attached to you at all times.
Yeah, and this does come to a head in one of my favorite moments in the series, right? But before we get to that, I do want to say this arc isn't the most plot heavy. That's quote one of the quote unquote filler arcs, you know? So there's not like there's things happening, but it's mostly the main cast is dueling and things are happening and they go to Atlantis for a little bit. This is an arc that's a lot more about the characters, at least for me. And this, like you're sold on these characters in a lot of really engaging scenes, like one in which Yugi or Yami, Atem, however you want to call him, is dueling Weevil, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes. Weevil Underwood. And well, does not technically Weevil, a Weevil that's been sort of possessed by the spirit of the Orichalcos, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and he does the monster card scene, you know?
The meme to hell, draw monster card.
Yeah, basically, Yami plays a card where it's like, I can keep flipping over the cards in my deck, and if it's they're monsters,
Berserker
it doesn't.
Berserker Soul, just so you know, the canon name of that card is Berserker Soul, and he has nothing on the field but Breaker, the magical soldier.
And he keeps flipping over cards, right? Basically saying monster card over and over again as he beats Weevil, and it's one of those duels where, like, you feel physical pain as you lose life points. And he damn near kills Weevil by continually drawing monster cards even after he wins.
And he's only stopped by Taya, which is the first, like, hint that there might actually be... Like, you know Taya has a crush on Yugi and by extension Yami. But, like, it's one of the first, like, signs that, hey, that might be something. Even though I think the canon pairing is Rebecca, the granddaughter mentioned in part one of this, like, little series we're doing.
Which we'll get to, because she's in the next arc, believe me. But Yami, like, almost murders a, at this point, main recurring cast member. A side character, but a main recurring member of the cast, you know, with Weevil and Rex. Just kind of because he's angry and really guilty about, like, the mistake he made.
Well, he also thinks Yugi has died. Like, the reason he gets so pissed off is because before the final turn of the duel, Weevil says, hey, you want to know where Yugi is? And pulls out like a random bug monster and rips the card, but it's back facing towards the Pharaoh.
Yeah.
So the Pharaoh thinks that Weevil just ripped Yugi's soul in half, basically.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, no, my apologies.
He like thinks Yugi has
with.
Just been murdered in front of him.
Yeah, which throughout the series, you obviously get a lot of moments of like Yami and Yugi in the same body bonding in like their weird brain place, like their pocket dimension inside the Millennium Puzzle where they can hang out and bond and stuff. But seeing them kind of separate is just a much more interesting dynamic, at least in the short term. It's just a really neat thing to see because you get to see like just Yami interact with like Taya and Tristan and Joey and other cast members.
I think the highlight for me, other than the cool dragon cards, because Joey, Kaiba, and Yugi each get like a new cool dragon that's from Atlantis that they've awakened somehow, was the Joey duel with the Australian guy whose name I can't remember, but there's an Australian biker gang member who has a deck that's all about physically putting on pieces of armor to attack your opponent. And they have a whole side plot about like Mai betraying the team to be with this Australian guy and Joey being really heartbroken about it. And then Joey's dragon turns out to have the ability to also like just sort of eat the abilities of other cards. So it becomes this weird mech suit battle between Joey and an Australian biker.
Leave it to Mr. Xavier to find himself the mech battle in Yu-Gi-Oh! And be like, that's the best part. I found it. I did it.
Absolutely. Bandit Keith, too, because he had the machine deck.
Bandit Keith does have the machine deck, and I love that. I expect most of this episode to be us talking about Dawn of the Duel. So I'm fine to like breeze into the next bit here, unless you have other things you want to say.
Not really. So do want to stress, I do actually like the Orichalcos arc, but the Orichalcos arc, like several of the other like weird short ones, like the virtual world or what we'll get into later with the Kaiba Grand Prix, maybe it's because of their airing schedule, whatever. They're very forgettable. They go by really quick, and they have all of these like weird, like, oh, that's a really good character moment. Oh, that's a really good character moment. But they're all in rapid succession, so it's hard to like really do a summary of what happened.
Yeah, because like I get that most of this has been us talking about Yu-Gi-Oh! Plot and what we like and don't like about it. But for like these three specific arcs, and I say three because it really is just virtual world, this one and the next one. It's just character moments because nothing super plot relevant happens other than you learning all the cool stuff about Atlantis.
Yeah, and dealing with, in my opinion, the lowest tier Yu-Gi-Oh! Villain is in the Orichalcos arc, even though as far as threat level, he's pretty up there.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think he's not particularly interesting compared to like what I think is generally a pretty good like rogues gallery, for lack of a better term. I like a lot of the antagonists and recurring villains like Pegasus and Bakura and Merrick and like Kind of My and Bandit Keith and all this stuff. I think they're all fantastic. So a little disappointed in this, but it'd be like that.
But moving on. To a much more interesting arc to talk about, kind of, the Kaiba Grand Championships, which will also be short.
The Kaiba Grand Championships is the least good part of Yu-Gi-Oh!
So Kaiba puts together a tournament for his 15th excuse to duel Yugi, where the entire point of the tournament is the winner of it gets the opportunity to challenge Yugi for his Yu-Gi-Oh! World Champion title, because Yugi has technically been the world champion of Duel Monsters since Duelist Kingdom, like, and Battle City. Like, he is the undisputed king of games.
Yeah, and it's a big tournament where you get a bunch of weird stuff, like you learn that Yugi's grandfather likes to put on a mask and play a character and start to duel, or how everything that happens in this entire arc is basically irrelevant because it doesn't change anything, and at the end, Yugi wins the tournament. Or
there's a rival corporation to the Kaiba Corporation of two brothers who are like world famous duelists, and one of them wins. His name is Leon, I believe, and then he just gets wrecked by Yugi. But it's a close duel. I distinctly remember that Yugi won that with only 200 life points left. Don't know why.
Now, me, a real intellectual, I give no shits about Leon because of one single character who must be mentioned. Abe the Monkey Man. He got monkeys. That's it. He's in the tournament.
That's fair. Overall, it was just a tournament arc, slightly rushed. The lowest tier arc of original Yu-Gi-Oh! In my opinion. I'm sure there are some people who are stands for some of the characters in it, but I don't think it was that good.
No disrespect. No disrespect if you enjoy this arc. I'm not going to shame you for liking what you like, but in the humble opinion of me, one of the two hosts of this podcast, I skip this arc every time I rewatch Yu-Gi-Oh! And I think it's boring and bad and not worth my time for however many episodes it is.
Yeah, it's just not for me. What is for me is an arc of Yu-Gi-Oh! That Trey did not know existed until I brought it up, because it was technically a mini series that happened between this arc and Dawn of the Duel, which you could also call the Egypt arc, the Pharaoh's Memories arc, whatever. Yu-Gi-Oh! Capsule Monsters, which was a whole 12 episode mini series and also amazing PlayStation 2 game.
So Capsule Monsters is a weird thing for me, because as a kid, I saw all of Yu-Gi-Oh! More than once. Like, I remember vividly different scenes and duels and imagery from every arc, including the arc that canonically happens after this one. He said Capsule Monsters, and I did not know what he was talking about. I have since watched part of it, read a synopsis, and it's real weird. Tristan, the only thing that I think is worth mentioning before letting Xavier go off about capsule monsters is that this is where we learn that Tristan was canonically the president of an international fan club for watermelons.
This is true.
Yeah, no, that's it. You can go off about capsule monsters now.
All right, so Yu-Gi-Oh! Capsule Monsters, making a long story short. The main Yugi friendship gang is teleported, isekai'd, if you will, into a series of dual dimensions, right? But instead of playing dual monsters the normal way, they get these big golden, like, pellet shotgun things that are attached to their arms. Think like the plasma casters from Alien vs. Predator. Yeah, that's yes. What I'm going with.
That's the reference you're going with for our anime podcast? Okay.
Sure. Anime fans watch science fiction movies. Appleseed exists.
Not that one, though. I don't think I know other people besides you and like a handful of people listening to this podcast who've even seen Alien vs. Predator,
all right,
which is hilarious.
I mean, it's in most Predator movies because the Predator loses his shit all the time.
Look, it'd be like that.
So anyway, they find these golden capsules that look a little bit like shotgun shells that you load up into these arm cannons, shoot them out, and they summon the monster. And they fight in real time, a little bit like a Pokemon battle or the Duel Masters arc where they go to the Duel Spirit Realm. Very similar. And Yugi gets this big fucking golden chest piece called Duel Armor, where he can combine himself with a Duel Spirit. At first it's Dark Magician, then it's Chaos Magician. He has a Blue Eyes White Dragon form very briefly, and then he has a Black Luster Soldier form very briefly.
Doesn't his Black Luster Soldier form also kind of merge with the Blue Eyes White Dragon form, if I'm remembering correctly?
Yes, it does. So basically, Yugi in the isekai world is able to directly fight dual spirits, like mano y mano. And so Capsule Monster continues with this theme for a while, with perhaps before the finale. And the finale is really like what Castle Monsters is for. Other than that, it's just an episodic weird dueling isekai. You know what I mean?
I do, yes.
But there's an amazing, like, small mini arc in Castle Monsters where there's a volcano at the top of one of these dueling worlds, and on it is the Red Eyes Black Dragon just sort of flying around. And Joey, being like, hey, that's my partner, that's my main man, that's my, like, marquee monster, climbs up there and ends up getting possessed by the Red Eyes Black Dragon. So he's wearing a dual armor version of the Red Eyes Black Dragon, despite not having dual armor, because if you get possessed by a dual spirit, like, that just sort of happens to you. And him and Yugi have like this really cool fight where he has to try and rein in the power of the Red Eyes Black Dragon before he finally gets it as a dual capsule. Really cool emotional moment. Yugi and Joey are the true eternal rivalry of Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Monsters.
Am I allowed to call this one filler because nothing that happens in it is relevant to what happens next?
No. This is canon.
Okay. Does anything that happens in Capsule Monsters affect the final arc of Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yes.
What is it? I genuinely don't know. Totally. I didn't finish it.
I don't actually think so. I actually, in the final duel, I think Yami remembers something that was told to him by the archaeologist. Archaeologist is in fake quotes. That led them to the isekai dimension, who said something to him. The archaeologist's name is Alexander, and you find out at the end of the isekai dimensions that it's actually Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great did not die. He got stuck in the isekai duel dimension with all of his friends.
This is true. The canon bad guy of Capsule Monsters kind of is like the real historical Alexander the Great, who is immortal.
So the Pharaoh,
isekai.
The Pharaoh and Alexander the Great have a big fucking Capsule Monsters duel for like two or three episodes, and it's really rad. And a bunch of cards that were never made into actual cards are used by the Alexander the Great team.
Well, there you go. I'm sorry you can't play with those cards in your competitive Yu-Gi-Oh deck, even though I'm 100% certain anything from original Yu-Gi-Oh is basically irrelevant in meta Yu-Gi-Oh right now.
Pretty much. I think Sangin might still be banned. Maybe.
Look, it'd be like that. They have some good stuff, yeah. But not really.
Wait.
I can't comment. Wait, what?
Before we go on. I have to shout out an honorable mention to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Capsule Monsters PlayStation 2 game. So they took the ideas from Capsule Monsters, and in a sort of way similar to Duelist of the Rose, made another Yu-Gi-Oh! Strategy game out of it. But this time they did it off of a gacha system. So you would get random capsules that would have monsters in them rather than booster packs. So you would have to gacha for your capsule monsters. But it was a really good game. And it was just a normal Yu-Gi-Oh! Strategy game. If you've never played a Yu-Gi-Oh! Strategy game, they basically give you a board and you move around your different capsule monsters to different parts of the board to attack until you get to your opponent, who is on the other side of the field, to attack them. Though I believe in capsule monsters, it might have been you could win a victory if you destroyed all of your opponent's capsules.
Sweet. No clue how much that game costs, but go play it if you can, I guess. I don't know. Yu-Gi-Oh games are good.
Right now.
Go.
Anyway, start talking about the next one.
Okay, now before we get to the next one, there is one thing that I need to mention, and it is a bit of foreshadowing for a future episode of the show, which is before the final arc of Yu-Gi-Oh, in kind of time travel, kind of a dream, kind of a spirit realm thing, the protagonist of Yu-Gi-Oh! GX comes back in time to duel Yugi. And we're going to talk about that when we talk about GX like 4 months from now.
This is fair. Also, if you go on eBay today, you can get a copy of Yu-Gi-Oh! Capsule Monsters Coliseum for the PlayStation 2 for as low as $18.
Not even $20? Let's go. They made so many copies. It was so popular. So that 20 minutes breezed by, and nothing super crazy convoluted happened, and it wasn't all that plot relevant, and it was probably great to listen to, and all of that is about to change, because, oh my god, is the end of Yu-Gi-Oh! Absolutely fucking stupid, and I love it.
Yeah, so these two arcs are going to be the meat of the discussion for today, and that's because they're wild, because they basically packed, like, you know how most shows will like sprinkle their main mystery throughout the whole season? No, Yu-Gi-Oh's like, you know all those questions you had, we're gonna answer them all right at the end and then somehow have a climax.
They end the Orichalcos arc by deciding they're gonna collect all 7 Millennium items so they can learn about Yami Yugi's true past, and eventually they learn about Yami Yugi's true past, and you find out that Atlantis fell, all the spirits fucking went away, cut back to 1,000 years ago, or 1,000 BC, so about 3,000 years ago, and you're in ancient Egypt, right?
Specifically the Gang's souls teleport back to ancient Egypt. The pharaoh's mind goes back into his body, and the Gang has to basically watch the pharaoh's original life like a movie.
And the original life is wild and includes references to a majority of the main cast, but in the past. Some of the main characters include Yami Yugi, or Atem, his father, his jealous and kind of murderous uncle, a priest named Kaiba, and the bandit king Bakura, as well as Zork or Zort Necrophades, which is the secret evil demon thing that's been possessing Bakura by pretending to be Yami Bakura the whole time.
But also is actually Yami Bakura, because bandit king Bakura was also possessed by the spirit of Zork. Very convoluted.
So there's this thing where people fight with what is called Ka now. And Ka is basically just dual monsters, except you use giant stone tablets and you can kind of like morph with the energies of the spirits sometimes.
And yes, I understand that Ka and Ka and Ba are a part of traditional Egyptian religion, but this is Yu-Gi-Oh! And there is an Egyptian man named Kaiba. So I'm sorry if all of this comes off as culturally insensitive.
So in the plot, you basically find out that a bunch of people want to run Egypt a bunch of different ways. And for a variety of reasons, Yami Yugi or Atem, their father and their uncle get like really mad at each other. And at one point, the uncle attempts to do a genocide and like has to sacrifice 99 people for something. And Bandit King Bakura witnesses this sacrifice. And this is how he gets all corrupted and stuff. And don't ask how, but after the sacrifice happens, the uncle like becomes the Blue Eyes White Dragon. And
Bandit King Bakura, being a kid who is from this village that got slaughtered, which I believe is coded Hebrew.
I think so, yes.
Notably hates the royal family after this, though Atem has no idea that any of this has even happened.
Yeah, so there's a sacrifice that happens, and Atem's father didn't want it to happen, and eventually Atem's father dies, and the uncle becomes the Blue Eyes White Dragon. Don't worry about it, he dies. And then Atem takes power, and then Bandit King Bakura is like, you know what I can do with my Ka and my duelist ability? Go murder Atem.
And everyone's super confused about this, right? Because duel monsters, as it exists within ancient Egypt at this time, is like something basically only like royal courtiers do. As like both a game and a life or death battle thing. Very confusing where the line lies with Yu-Gi-Oh! Because they use it both ways.
And Bandit King Bakura goes on a dueling tirade and duels people to try to get to Atem, right? And one person he duels is the right-hand man of Atem, a man named Mahad. And Mahad beats Bandit King Bakura's ass, right? But he only does it by fusing with his Ka, and Mahad becomes the Dark Magician.
Also, if I'm remembering correctly, isn't Mahad the canon ancestor of Merrick's entire family? I don't know if we went over it last time, but Merrick's family basically knows all of the things about the Millennium Item because they're descendants of the guardians of the royal family that Atem belongs to, basically.
I do, in fact, believe this to be true, that Mahad is Merrick's family bloodline, and Atem is obviously the pharaoh, and Bakura blood, everything. The guy named Kaiba.
It's his cousin, isn't it? Like his uncle's adopted son?
Yeah, and he's also a priest, but then I have this question, right? Yeah. And this question is, ancient Egypt Kaiba looks like Seto Kaiba.
Directly. But Seto like pale and everything.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Is these like they look identical. Bandit King Bakura look identical.
No, Bandit King Bakura is tan, right? Like they do darken up these characters, except for the most part, Kaiba.
That is true. Kaiba does look identical. Here's the thing though. He's adopted.
I think it's more to say, well, two things, right?
Because his birth last name is not Kaiba, because when him and Mokuba were adopted by Gozaburo, they were named Kaiba.
Yeah. So this is what I want to say. Two things. So one, Gozaburo Kaiba, his last name is Kaiba. I think the implication is that this character's first name is Kaiba. Two, Kaiba very well could be descended from this person because, as we know from last time, Kaiba is also adopted, and his first name is Seto, which is vaguely Egyptian enough.
I refuse to give any credence to the idea that they planned the Egypt bullshit with Seto Kaiba that well. I refuse to give them that power.
And this is mirrored in the fact that Kaiba's apparent soul ancestor, which all of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Characters who are like watching this like a spirit movie are also like, is that fucking Kaiba?
Yes, it is. Don't worry about it.
Kaiba's soul ancestor has a very similar life background to Kaiba and is also being like groomed to be like, don't you want to take over the pharaohhood from Atim? Don't you, High Priestess Kaiba? And he has like a moral dilemma about the whole thing, which is to say that Yugi and Kaiba have been destined to do this.
And so all these things happen. Eventually, even through the sacrifice and victory of Mahad, Bakura gets to duel Atem and like wins.
No,
like just like just
nope, no, wins. You're skipping. You're skipping Wait. A shit ton of stuff.
Oh god, what am I skipping? What happens next? Because
you're talking about the final duel arc.
Wait, no, because in the original timeline, Atem loses, and then in the now everyone's back in time in ancient Egypt timeline, they like rewrite it and beat Zort Necrophades this time.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're skipping so ahead because first, like at the same time as the Mahad thing, you find out that like one of the, I think she's a shrine maiden or an equivalent of a shrine maiden in their weird religion. You find out that she's Dark Magician Girl. The love interest for Atim when he was actually alive is actually the spirit of Dark Magician Girl.
That is true. This is a thing
because they were both court magicians.
Yeah.
And then
fill in the gaps for me. Fill in the gaps for me up until the Bakura duel.
And then you find out that Bandit King Bakura is trying to awaken Zark, who everybody thought was sealed away in the Dark Dimension, by collecting the dual spirits from the royal court. Like they catch on to the plan, but by the time they catch on, it's too late, and he's about to summon Zark. Which is also interesting because Zark is sealed away, and Zark is like our Satan figure, but there are quite a few videos and resources that basically point to Exodia the Forbidden One, who if you remember is the super mega awesome I win button from episode 1 of Yu-Gi-Oh!, is supposedly modeled after the Christian god, implying that they sealed away the Christian god as well as Zark.
And... well, they also basically summon a literal angel with the Creator of Light at one point when they, in the time travel part, not the original, like, 1000 BC, the time travel return to the 1000 BC, they have to summon the Creator of Light to beat Necrophades.
Yeah.
And, like, Bandit King Bakura, Necrophades, the whole nine. And all this happens and is crazy whack. At some point, Priest Kaiba duels Atem in the original timeline, I think, near the end.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't remember where that is. I just know it's in there. Because this shit, like, I can't explain to everyone enough that most of this comes wildly at you at a crazy pace. And like half of this happens in the span of like three episodes at one point. Like episode 47 and 46 of this arc is like a exposition bomb, the likes of which you have never seen in your mortal lives.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, Seto, like the ancient Kaiba, right?
Yeah.
Attempts to, or rather his uncle... extracts another Blue Eyes White Dragon from a character named Kiera or Kiara.
Yeah.
And like that becomes a whole thing. And basically, Seto is like, oh, I'm back to my senses. I'm not going to try to kill Yugi again.
Yeah.
But in the background of all of this bullshit, under the city, Yami Bakura from the normal timeline is dueling Yugi Moto.
Yeah. And there's lots of things happening all at the same time all over the place. And the whole point is that the gang has time traveled back to stop Necrophades, Bandit King, Bakura, all that shit from winning, no, basically.
No, that's not why they've traveled
Wait,
back.
No, is it not? Why did they go back?
They have traveled back specifically to learn the Pharaoh's name, because it's only with the Pharaoh's name that they can complete the ceremonial duel that has to happen. And once,
oh my god, you're right.
And once they have the name and inscribe it on like a nameplate that the Pharaoh has now, then everything will be fine. But Yami,
I forgot Yami all Bakura, this bullshit happened.
Yeah. Yami,
all this bullshit happened just to stop them.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yami Bakura, taking this chance when time travel is available, goes back in time with them to try to rewrite history so that Zark wins. Because canonically, Zork does lose, like, in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's completely on me. They go back in time just because they're fulfilling destiny, basically. And Bakura says absolutely not for, like, 40 episodes straight. Are there, what are the other major details we're missing from this fucking convoluted mess?
Just basically the end, which is, so they have a duel between Yami Bakura and Yugi, in which we see Yugi duel without the Pharaoh for basically the first time ever. And Bakura fucking has a mill deck. If you don't play card games, basically Bakura is trying to take all of the cards out of Yugi's deck. So that he decks out, because in Yu-Gi-Oh, as with most card games, if it comes around to your turn and you can't draw a card, then you lose. Yugi pulls out some bullshit, which, if I'm remembering correctly, Gandora the Dragon of Destruction, my brain says.
That name sounds right. That name sounds close enough.
And they managed to win, right? But they beat Yami Bakura. He's out of the way. They find the Pharaoh's name. But, of course, they're little Japanese kids. They can't read ancient Egyptian. So they just sort of write down the hieroglyphics. And while they're doing this, right, Zork has been summoned. He has destroyed the city, which is the capital of Egypt. The Pharaoh summons the three Egyptian gods. They can't do shit. Shada, who is like another character, dies. Isis dies. One of his advisors, I think his grandfather, summons Exodia. Exodia fucking gets slapped up. And that guy dies.
Then they make the Creator of Light to eventually not lose.
Yeah, so Yugi and his friends show up. They try to summon, like, dual monsters on dual disc. Zark isn't having it. Kills some more of Atem's friends, like he does in ancient history. And then Taya, being a great person, says, "Hey guys, remember the hieroglyphics? If we tell the Pharaoh his name, then he'll remember how he won," basically. So they basically spell out his name in the hieroglyphics, Atem, and that's how the Pharaoh learns how to use the Creator of Light again.
Yep, and beats Mr. Necrophades again. In this weird alt history rewritten destiny timeline.
Yeah, because, like, okay, so the events of, and this is where Yu-Gi-Oh gets kind of weird, the events of the Dawn of the Duel, as far as like the Pharaoh's memories part of it, are both a historical event in that this was the Pharaoh's original life in the original timeline, but also a like parallel time in which, like, if anything changes, like, Yugi and his friends are there to get the name, but if anything changes, like, it's fucked forever.
Yeah, it also it's never real. I don't think it's ever really stated if it's like the thing they're doing is like spirit world travel or like an alternate timeline or like legitimate time travel or like another dimensions version of this of all this bullshit.
Well, it seems like it's an alternate timeline from how
I think it's alternate timeline
teaches it.
Yeah. I lean that they're in a different timeline now. Like, they've created another timeline. It's at this point that the millennium items are destroyed after they win? Like, did they get buried in ancient Egypt, basically?
No. absolutely not. Also, it's worth noting that the important like bit about releasing Zark is that to release Zark, Bakura needed the Millennium Items, and the Millennium Items were held by the members of the original royal court in this part of Egypt.
Yeah, which is like the eye was held by like the people above Atem, and then, you know, the rod was held by everybody that had it.
The rod
and
was held by Kaiba. That's
yeah, oh my god, you're right. And the puzzle, etc. Like they for the most part, the analogs they had in the real world get them, except Pegasus has the eye, and as far as I'm aware, it doesn't have that big of an analog anywhere, and the eye belongs to like Yugi's father and uncle.
But yeah, so all of these Millennium Items turn out to be like super fucking all powerful summon your soul magic MacGuffins. And this alternate timeline happens, and they finally figure out the Pharaoh's name, and the creator of light, who I can only describe as a god, explains, sort of, not really, why the Pharaoh is still stuck in the Millennium Puzzle when all of his friends, like, died after the Zork fight. This also wraps back around to some Duelist Kingdom lore, which is to say that we were told from the beginning that Pegasus invented duel monsters, right? Like, he came up with the game. Only to learn that Pegasus plagiarized duel monsters from the ancient Egyptians.
Yeah, from, like, the giant tablets they used. Because of the archaeology trips that were taken by many people to Egypt. Good morning again, everybody, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, recording the second half of this episode the next night because of campus internet. We apologize if audio quality changes at all between the two halves of this episode, and we apologize if it feels a tiny bit disjointed, but about 40 minutes into our last recording session, campus internet where we go to school shut itself off, and it is what it is. What we're going to do now is go to the Anime News Corner, which will be really exciting for this week, and then finish off the second half of the episode. Thanks for your understanding. So the Anime News Corner this week is twofold. One, as everyone who's a longtime listener of the show knows, we adore Guilty Gear. And Guilty Gear Strive is coming out in a couple of months, and they dropped new character announcements at like a dev breakdown thing. And it's an original character named Giovanna, who looks like a Rushdown character with a cool electricity dog.
Yeah, definitely a cop. From what we can see, her like a Secret Service agent. I've seen some people being like, what if she's a part of Chip's Secret Service, which would be rad. But also Chip has too many like characters like, around him. So I hope it's not that. She's got a cool wolf. There's a recycling symbol, and I knew what it meant, but now I'm blanking.
It has a heart in it, and the joke that Maximilian Dude made was, it's a like and a retweet, but you told me it was some Japanese play on words.
Yeah, it's like a play it's about Japanese plastic recycling,
which is PET,
I can't remember.
PET, PET.
Oh, that's right.
Japanese plastic recycling companies have, divisions basically have this acronym PET that I don't know what it stands for, but the dog is her pet, and it's Daisuke being a piece of shit, making that his funny joke.
And you gotta pet the puppy. You gotta pet the puppy on its head, because it's right on the middle of his big forehead. As always, is a 10 out of 10 design. And more black characters in anime.
Woo! We stan. I like playing Rushdown characters. I like playing Zoner characters as well. I like playing all the characters. So I'll give her a try when Strive comes out. I'm really excited about it. She looked really fun. But to the thing that got Xavier much more hype, at the end of this gorgeous Guilty Gear trailer, there was a silhouette of an old familiar face to Guilty Gear fans.
Yeah, there was a teaser for a character who's been gone for a long time, maybe since Accent Corps? Question mark? Anji Mito, who was one of the few Japanese people left in the world, because as you know, in any good anime thing, the nation of Japan has to be decimated in some way, and the Japanese has to be really special because of it. In Guilty Gear, it's because they have ki, and no one else has ki, which breaks the rules of magic. But Anji Mito is a cool guy with fans who has a bunch of disgusting air grab setups that I'm hoping he still has.
Yeah, all of the discourse around this character online for the past couple of days has been like, is he still going to be disgustingly annoying? Because if he is, it's going to be annoying. But if he isn't, then it won't feel like Guilty Gear. You know?
Yeah, because Anji's the character that, like, puts you in the corner and you just sort of gotta hold that. It's Anji and Johnny. You just gotta hold that.
I don't like just sitting in the corner and holding it, but that's that's because you play characters that make you sit in the corner and hold it. I'm terrified. I'm not excited. I'm gonna probably pick up Ram and, as I always do, as my main, and try Giovanna. She seems really cool. So Guilty Gear News is the first half of the news corner. Now, Xavier, introduce the second half of the beautiful news corner today.
Second piece of news is that we received a, I believe, date for the premiere of the... Yes, January 8th will be the premiere of the Sailor Moon Eternal anime movie. And this was just revealed. So Sailor Moon Eternal... two-part movie series, and it's going to cover the Dead Moon arc of the manga and replace season 4 or 5 of Sailor Moon Crystal.
Woo!
Which should be exciting. Dead Moon arc, I really enjoy, at least. I'm not really sure how it's received in the general Sailor Moon fandom, but I'm pretty excited to see how the movies come out.
I have not read Sailor Moon. It's on the list, as we all have long backlogs. I have watched a large chunk of Sailor Moon. I would call myself a big fan. I like Magical Girl series. I'm ecstatic about this. I think it's gonna be a really great time. More Sailor Moon content is never something for me to complain about.
They also released a bunch of the designs for certain characters that will be showing, and the Fisheye, Hawk's Eye, and Tiger's Eye models all look really nice. So I'm excited to see them in animation. I've been following Crystal, and I think that it's a really good, I guess, reanimated version of Sailor Moon, and that they've done a lot to sort of up the quality.
They also had like a trailer that came out with this post that we saw, and the trailer was gorgeous. And it showed off a lot of very cool things. It showed off a lot of different cuts from like different transformations in the show and things like that. And I'm just really excited. I think it's going to be real damn neat, you know?
Probably. So when we got cut off by school internet, I was sort of just explaining the wrap up of the ancient Egypt part, the Dawn of the Duel part. Or the Pharaoh's Memory part of Dawn of the Duel.
Yeah. Right. You were talking about, I think specifically we were talking about the fact that they've done like an alternate timeline jump, not like some other dimension, not actual time travel. It's like an alternate timeline kind of thing.
Yeah. So they do an alternate timeline thing, and the Creator of Light shows up. And he's like, hey, there's still one more thing you gotta do with Tim. Don't you remember why you were locked in the puzzle to begin with? Which, side story, as a kid, I thought this was really fucking cool. I don't know why I thought the Creator of Light was so fucking cool. But literally the most blatant and bold, we're going to give you the exposition now so we can finish the series.
It happens. It comes out of nowhere. Like, I'll be real, the amount of stuff you learn in the span of a handful of episodes, like 40 episodes into this arc, is pretty stupid. And I love it for being like cheesy anime, we dumped everything on you at once, goodness, but it's a bit overwhelming.
It's literally, and the next thing that happens is one singular duel, and we'll get into like the plot conceit of why this duel has to happen. But it feels like the creators of Yu-Gi-Oh! Were so caught up in making tournament arc after tournament arc that they never really thought about like the series ending, which is strange. And this is something that's changed a lot. Like, after the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Series, like, GX has a clear plot structure that it's going for, and so on and so forth. So, like, this is really a we-didn't-think-of-what-to-do-next kind of thing, I think.
I get that vibe from it as well, right? Watching GX, it feels like a lot of the main cast of GX had more long-term story beat directions to take as the series progressed, right? Than most of the cast of Yu-Gi-Oh! Does, like the original. The one that always comes to mind is, like, imagine if nothing happened with Chaz for like two full seasons, and then all his character development happened in like two episodes. And they're like, all right, we wrote an entire story for Chaz 70 episodes deep in GX or something.
Which I can understand, because as we went over in part one of this like little mini series that we're doing on the original Yu-Gi-Oh! This is in no way based off the manga. In fact, Duel Monsters was a very small part of the manga. So they very well were probably just sort of going by the seats of their pants. Like, how many cards can we make? Because we need to sell cards, and didn't expect it to become such a big thing.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, people have gone on record saying we made Yu-Gi-Oh! To sell playing cards to children. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, right? Like, original Transformers was made to sell toys to kids, and original Transformers is a fun time, you know?
I don't know what you're talking about. Original Transformers was made to be the space opera that Star Wars wishes it was, and I'll hear nothing different.
I plan to watch Legend of the Galactic Heroes once I finish what I'm currently watching and reading, so I will need no other space story ever if I am to be, if the people I trust are to be believed. But yeah, I have no problem with the way they've done that. Like, I get it. You have to make money. You're doing ass pulls and stuff. It's Yu-Gi-Oh! This is part of what happens when you make Yu-Gi-Oh! So I'm not mad about it or anything, but it's definitely overwhelming, is what I would say, for how much they just kind of drop on the viewer.
Also, while we're speaking about like Yu-Gi-Oh! Business practices, something that I realized we forgot to go over, so maybe we can backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
At the beginning of Battle City, Yu-Gi-Oh! Starts to get a lot more rules. And that shit we mentioned in Duelist Kingdom, like battlefield bonuses, just sort of fades away, and they start making it so that you can't summon high power monsters immediately, and trying to get closer and closer to the TCG in the second half of Yu-Gi-Oh! And the OCG, of course. And you can really tell, like, this is now about the card game, whereas before it was, this is a cartoon that happens to have the card.
Oh, yeah. I think you notice this even more when you get past Yu-Gi-Oh! Original itself, specifically into, like, 5Ds onward. It gets really rules heavy in a way where you're like, oh, they're actually kind of playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And dumb weird shit still happens. Don't get me wrong. It does. It's, you know. But in the same way that you showed me, like, Cardfight Vanguard, which starts way rules heavy, like you're just playing the game actually, you know, it takes Yu-Gi-Oh! A while to get there.
Yeah, which I think is just sort of a consequence of what Yu-Gi-Oh! Is. All of this to say, we have now arrived at the final moment in Yu-Gi-Oh! That will carry us to the conclusion, the final duel between Atim, the Pharaoh, and Yugi. So the Creator of Light breaks it down like this. Atim, the reason you've been stuck in the puzzle is because there's no one better than you at Duel Monsters, basically. So to prove that you've given Yugi his confidence throughout the entire series, and you've made him into an amazing duelist, you guys have to duel, and Yugi has to win, and if he doesn't win, 500 more years in the puzzle for you. Implying that this has happened before, because Atim's been in the puzzle for what, like 3,000 years?
Yeah. The main story takes place around the year like 1990 to 2000 ish, right? And the Egypt backstory is like 1000 BC. So this has happened like 5 or 6 times at least.
So Yugi, of course, is very nervous, but he wants to help his friend. And the Pharaoh decides, I'm not gonna pull any kind of punches. Which, as a narrative device, I know it might have sounded like we were shitting on the fact that Yu-Gi-Oh! Put all of its plot all at the end, but I think they did something super smart in that it was something very logical to end it on. You get the sort of Aladdin set the genie free motif. You get a long goodbye, essentially, to these characters that you've loved. And you get to see Yugi get his confidence, because for the majority of Yu-Gi-Oh! The series, Yugi is not in the dueler seat, despite the fact that he actually is really good at dueling from what we see of him. But he doesn't have any self-confidence.
Times where, like, Yami or Atem by himself must duel, or Yugi by himself must duel. But for the most part, it is Atem dueling with, like, Yugi's heart in there, basically. And this is one of my favorite duels in the whole series. I'll be completely honest. I love this shit as a kid.
So they go back and forth in what seems like is going to be a clear Atem victory, like, for a little bit. But Yugi holds his own. Specifically, this is the debut of a card mechanic I really like. The level up monsters that will not be seen again until late in GX. I think Yugi uses them, the Silent Swordsman, the Silent Magician cards.
Yes, Silent Magician is a excellent card in this fight.
Where Yugi's deck, much like him, is themed around growth and watching his monsters grow, whereas Atem uses the deck that he's essentially been using the entire time with all three Egyptian God cards because he's overpowered like that. Fuck you, Yugi.
Yeah, part of the difficulty of this thing is, like, to set him free, they both have to duel at their best, and Atem gets the Egyptian God cards, like, as part of the fight, to really, like, make sure that Yugi can, like, outwit him, you know? That's one of the conceits of this whole thing, and it's a little unfair to the point where I'm pretty sure Kaiba, like, deadass tries to leave in the middle of the duel. He's like, yeah, this is pointless, you're gonna be in that box under 500 years, sorry, dog, and, like, tries to leave.
Kaiba is also really salty about the fact that, wait, you're telling me that I've been focused on fucking Yugi this whole time and it's been that Pharaoh?
Yeah. The whole time. It's incredible.
Which is entirely fair. Because we sort of rushed over it in Battle City, because there's so much wild shit happens in Battle City, the Egyptian God cards are fucking broken.
Oh, they're, like, all crazy.
Even one of these is, like, a dual ender. Obelisk the Tormentor just fucking hurts you for, like, 1,000 life points when he wants to, doesn't he?
Yeah, and his base stats are in, like, the 4K zone, which is, like, if Obelisk attacks you and you have nothing in defense mode, you just lose the game.
It was wild shit. The Winged Dragon of Ra, like, resurrected itself.
And Slifer
the Sky Dragon had functionally infinite attack points if you fulfill a couple conditions.
Yeah, it scales off of other conditions in the game to an obscene level. All of them are meant to be the best cards ever, because they're based off of Egyptian gods. That's the whole point. They're some of the strongest, like, spirits in the history of, like, Ka and Atlantis and all this bullshit. And Yugi just sort of has to hold that, like, he's in the corner in a fighting game, and figure out how to get out.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and this might be why people think the Seal of Orichalcos arc is filler or should be considered filler, Yugi does not get, like, his cool fucking, like, dragon from Atlantis.
Yeah, this is true. He doesn't have that. He just sort of has to kind of figure his way through with, like, this growth deck you've talked about.
Yeah, Eye of Timaeus. I feel like that was Yugi's dragon. That's what I'm going with.
Sure. I'm not going to double check that live, but I have faith in your Yu-Gi-Oh knowledge. You've proved yourself pretty crazy at this.
Yeah, I think Eye of Timaeus was Yugi, Fang of Critias was Kaiba, and I do not remember Joey's, just that it was the claw of something. Anyway, so Yugi, like, basically has flashbacks in the same way, I'm going to slip Tokusatsu in, like Power Rangers has clip shows, where he's just remembering all the duels they've had together and all the times the Pharaohs helped him through. And he's literally using all the problem solving that they've done together to figure out how to get around the Egyptian gods and the Pharaoh just being really fucking good. And it's this really, like, rocky moment of you watching Yugi do everything that you saw him learn in the training arc that was all of original Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah. it gets even crazier when you realize, like, yeah, Atem even gets, like, Yugi's iconic cards, like Dark Magician and Dark Magician Girl and shit. Like, they throw Yugi to the birds completely. And spoilers for this very old show, Yugi does win, which is incredible, yeah. And I love that. He does it with Silent Magician, right?
I forget if it's specifically Silent Magician or Silent Swordsman, but he does, like, clinch the fucking victory versus what we have been taught is one of the strongest decks in all of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, so I double-checked this live, by the way. He uses a level 0 Silent Magician and mixes it with other spell cards to make it a 3,500 attack monster to kill both Dark Magician and Dark Magician Girl, and then uses a trap card that he set, like, at the start of the duel, basically, to prevent the summoning, or to prevent Monster Reborn from re-summoning Slifer the Sky Dragon.
I remember this because it was like, okay, because this duel is cut into parts, right? I remember distinctly as a child, Yugi putting down a face down and it literally not being relevant till the very last turn of the duel.
Yeah, and he sits there just waiting because, like, we've seen it. We know he has Monster Reborn. It card's so good it was banned from competitive in official TCG Yu-Gi-Oh! And he prevents the resummoning of Slifer the Sky Dragon and is like, you know what? You're free. And there's this moment where he just sort of attacks directly with a 3,500 attack monster and fucking wins.
Which is to say the Pharaoh was so ahead that he needed a 3,500 attack monster.
Oh, absolutely. No. He's not, this is not like a fair back and forth. Once again, Kaiba tries to leave in the middle of this duel. Like, just sort of is like, no, I don't, I've been dueling this guy the whole time. He can't beat me. He can beat me. What are you going to do? You know? And I kind of love this ending personally. I don't know about you. But I've always, I like stuff like this Aladdin freeing the genie moment. I like, Yugi freeing Atem. Cause it has this, this sort of friendship bonding memories motif where it's like, look, he's free, but he's never gonna be gone. Because the memories are there and the friendship is there. And then he, like, turns around and he's like, and all of these people are still here who remember him and who I still have in my life. And it's pretty cliche. This is pretty common in anime, but I'm a sucker for it, you know?
Yeah. And I remember us talking again on part one, I believe, about the Yujo friendship like pun and how the core of Yu-Gi-Oh is really the friendship between Yugi and Joey, and the lengths that Yugi will go to help Joey out, contemplating losing Duelist Kingdom so Joey can win, contemplating, in fact, I think he did give up the Millennium Puzzle when Joey got mind controlled by Merrick in Battle City. So it's weird. Because you always know, like, from the very first episode when they did the marker on their hands and they're like, this is our symbol of friendship, and it keeps coming up, very cheesy. You always know that the Pharaoh is seemingly, like, included, but he's only included because Yugi is there. So an important part about this final duel is, and the learning his history, is that the Pharaoh is getting this acknowledgement of, no, you're our friend too.
Which is really sweet, because I like stuff where, like, there's two characters in the same, like, being for a while, and they get split apart, and we have to deal with what's going on with that. I eat this shit up, and as much as Yu-Gi-Oh! At times is slow, or at times fumbles, or had weird exposition dumps, or does big Yu-Gi-Oh! Ass pulls, as we said, like, in episode one, I was always sold on, like, the heart of Yu-Gi-Oh! You know, that was one thing that never faltered in my enjoyment of the series, was I always felt the heart of the characters and the heart of the people who are putting in work, even, like, to make this TV show good, even though all it needs to do is sell cards to kids, you know? And that's there throughout all of Yu-Gi-Oh! Which is probably the biggest compliment I can give. Even in, like, the shittier arcs, it still feels like Yu-Gi-Oh! And while a lot of times in anime, like, the power of friendship feels really convoluted and stupid, or the heart of the cards feels really convoluted and stupid, it always feels so, like, genuine and just on its sleeve in Yu-Gi-Oh! That I can't help but be like, that's admirable.
Yeah, and even, like, talking about how the duel actually ended with Yugi flipping that last trap card. For me, the designs were not what sold me on Yu-Gi-Oh! I actually think, as far as, like, card games and card game anime, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has some of the worst card designs, like, as far as art and creativity and that kind of thing. But it was always this almost legitimate feeling of tension, even though, like, of course there's going to be a Yu-Gi-Oh! Ass pull or some Heart of the Cards bullshit. Tristan's not really going to stay brain downloaded into that robot monkey, you know? But it always managed to, like, keep you on your toes, and it did feel like a will they, won't they. And it did feel like there was a new surprise every time, and they didn't just win because they were the best, right? Or because their deck was the best. It felt like they were doing something, even if it was just the writers.
Yeah, 100%. Yu-Gi-Oh! We've kind of reached this point now where we finished the last bit, which I'll end it off by saying this is the part where the Millennium items, like, fall away into the earth and are sealed away forever. And yeah. Yugi goes to the spirit world, or Atem goes to the spirit world, and Yugi and friends go home. And that's how the series ends, right there. And there's movies and stuff, but we've kind of reached this last little bit of, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! General love, praise, critique, and thought, I guess, right? We've reached that point of the episode.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite arc in Yu-Gi-Oh!? What is your favorite duel in Yu-Gi-Oh!? And what is the number one thing about Yu-Gi-Oh! That you want to say, just as, like, a final thoughts about the series?
All right, so my favorite arc in Yu-Gi-Oh! Is Capsule Monsters.
I know.
Because, wow, is that fucking random, came out left field, but oh so deliciously cheesy. Probably other than Digimon, the first isekai that I was like, I'm here for this.
Yeah.
Favorite duel is a hard one between Yugi and Joey in Duelist Kingdom, because of the thematic elements surrounding that duel.
Yeah.
And this is before we meet Serenity as an actual character. And
yeah.
She's still almost like this weird MacGuffin. Or Joey versus My Valentine for the first time, because nothing will ever be as ridiculous as she perfumed her cards and she can pick out each perfume scent perfectly.
That's completely fair. That's a godlike Yu-Gi-Oh! Ass pull right there.
As for, like, what was the last one?
Just what I would like one final thing you want to say about Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, you can make it good, you can make it bad, you can make it both. A final Yu-Gi-Oh! Hurrah before we spend the next, like, 3 weeks doing other things and then come back and do GX probably.
Okay, so my last Yu-Gi-Oh! Hurrah for now, and also a sneak peek into GX. and possibly the movies, is that everything we just told you means nothing and is irrelevant, because according to every version of the Yu-Gi-Oh! Future, Atem did not go free and find eternal rest, but instead stuck around and dueled with Yugi and gave the new main character, Jaden Yuki, a winged Kuriba.
And when we get to GX, we'll explain how that works in the timeline. It's very wonky, it's very stupid, and I like it a lot. But yeah. It matters in my heart, which is what makes it matter.
That's fair. But the retcon of, like, the entire point of that final duel, I always find hilarious.
I agree. Like, I was mad watching the first episode of GX where he walks up and he's like, take this card, kid. And I'm like, that wasn't Yugi. That was fucking Atem. I was mad. But yeah, for me, my favorite arc is Battle City. I like the city. I like the battles. My favorite part of Yu-Gi-Oh! Overall is the second half, like post-virtual world, when they're in, like, the finals and everything, and you get shit like Destiny Board, and you get the first major uses of all the god cards, and you get the duel where Joey, like, technically wins but blacks out before he can make the last attack and shit. Like, I love that. That's my...
Still some bullshit.
He deserved it. My boy Joey, who is my favorite Yu-Gi-Oh! Character. That's my favorite arc. My favorite duel, emotionally, is Joey Yugi End of Duelist Kingdom, because they sold these like four kids like DVDs, you know, that were like groups of a few episodes of a TV show, and I had that duel, and I watched that shit on repeat throughout my childhood and teen years, and I still have it. It's at my house. And also just generally watching that arc and seeing both of them having grown then and then getting to see where they go after that is always really great. I just love that duel. Also love Atem Yugi at the end. And basically anytime Seto Kaiba is on screen, except the one time where he says, "I'm going to kill myself if you don't let me win." That one's cringe and I don't like it. That one's mean.
Yeah, that one's wild. And doesn't... That's another thing with Yu-Gi-Oh! That's both a criticism and sometimes, like, what makes it fun. Characterization wildly shifts depending on when you're watching.
Completely. Seto Kaiba is 10 different people in one body. And I love that for him. But my final Yu-Gi-Oh! Thoughts, I kind of got them out a little earlier. I like Yu-Gi-Oh! I played the card game as a kid. I don't play the card game now because it's very expensive and not that well designed. As far as I'm aware, as the people of this show know, we're more Magic the Gathering people.
This is true. Yu-Gi-Oh! is poorly designed and very expensive.
I also like the Pokemon card game, but Yu-Gi-Oh! For me always had the heart. Even when it was doing stupid Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff, even with its, I think it has a good dub. I like Yu-Gi-Oh! A lot. I'm always going to like Yu-Gi-Oh! All of the versions of it, except the ones I haven't seen yet, but we'll get around to those.
You brought up something I want to touch on, though.
Yeah, sure, go for it. I got time.
Like Dragon Ball Z.
Okay.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Has a weirdly, I don't care if you think Japanese voice acting is better. I don't care where you stand on sub versus dub. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Dub's a fucking classic.
I agree. No, I love the Yu-Gi-Oh! Dub. I think it's excellent. As someone who, you know me, we're mostly sub people. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Dub goes. I don't care.
Yeah, I try not to take a side in the sub versus dub war, but it's just like, dude, some dubs just hit.
Yeah, I'm not one who tends to be like, always sub, whatever. Always dub, whatever. But, like, I prefer watching Yu-Gi-Oh! Dubbed. I like watching Cowboy Bebop dubbed, personally. I don't know. Most of my shows I watch subbed. But there is something special about stuff like the Yu-Gi-Oh! Dub. Or, like, even the original Pokemon dub, you know? Just because of how we engage with them as kids. In the same way that I really love like the Sonic Adventure 2 dubbing, which is really stupid and bad, unlike Yu-Gi-Oh's, but has a place in my heart nonetheless. That's probably the last thing I have to say about Yu-Gi-Oh! The music's good, the ass pulls are great, it's all about friendship, love, and the heart of the cards, and I'm excited to, like a month from now, talk to you about my boy Jaden.
Yeah, so just as a closing, thank you for listening to us talk about Yu-Gi-Oh! For an additional episode. It will probably happen again because I think GX is also really long,
it's,
like in its entirety.
It's like 350 episode seasons and all of it's plot relevant.
Yeah, so expect this to happen again, though hopefully without as big a gap between part one and two. Thank you for continuing to listen despite the hiatus. Midterms are hell, but we made it through.
Oh, yeah, we made it through. Your midterm grade's good?
Yeah, like, here's the thing, right? Here's some real talk to end the anime podcast.
Oh, yeah, we're on our life advice part at the end. This is my favorite part.
Midterm grades were due before one could possibly grade the midterm papers that were due. So, like, schools, let up on professors. Not cool.
Yeah, no, give them a break. I saw a tweet the other day that was like, all of us being real empathetic to these students drowning during a pandemic, let's also be empathetic to the professors drowning during a pandemic and the world being on fire and all that jazz.
So shout out to academia.
Damn right. Before we go, I do want to say my personal thank you for listening to everybody. I don't know what next week's episode is going to be. Follow us on Twitter at SatAnimePod. I run that because I don't have a personal Twitter yet. For me to constantly tweet Sakuga gifts and pictures of alligators, because those are the only things I really care about, or like Xavier's liked tweets. Thank everybody for listening. Thank everyone who worked on making this stupid children's card game and this stupid show about the stupid children's card game that we like so much. Shout out to academia. Shout out to the planet. We have so much faith in you. We don't make any money off of this or do any advertising or whatever. So if you know someone who you think would enjoy the show, please share it with them. And other than that, we'll see you next week. And I'm going to end it with a quote from the end of Yu-Gi-Oh! If that's cool.
Sure. Yeah. But side note, no one tell Trey that I actually do make money off of this. He just doesn't get like a residual.
Look, I wouldn't even be mad. I'd be a little bit mad, but I'm here because I like talking about anime with my dear friend Xavier. As they say at the end of Yu-Gi-Oh, when Atem leaves, the end of one adventure is the beginning of another. Have a great week.